Some Christians wonder if boycotting businesses is really biblical, and that's a fair question. Ed Vitagliano and M.D. Perkins address that subject in depth in the AFA Cultural Institute video, Stewardship in Action, The Power of the Boycott. They share the purpose of boycotts and show how they can impact the culture. We're giving that DVD to you free as our thanks for supporting AFA this month. Go to afa.net today for more details. afa.net.
Welcome to Today's Issues. Join us for the next hour as we offer a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Ed Vitagliano.
And welcome to Today's Issues. Ed Vitagliano sitting in for Tim Wildman this week, although I do think that Tim will be in the captain's chair for Trivia Friday. He'll be returning back from the Boston tour, a spiritual heritage tour up in the Boston area. I think he will be back for Trivia Friday. And so you can look forward to hearing the master on Trivia Friday. I'm joined in studio by Fred Jackson. Good morning, Fred.
Good morning there.
And Tony Vitagliano. We got him back in today. Good morning, Tony.
Good morning.
And Chris Woodward is with us this morning as the opening news guy. Good morning to you, Chris.
Good morning. Thank you very much.
By the way, at 10:30, Jenna Ellis will be on the show, and we're going to be talking to her about the influence of Qatar or Qatar. I don't know why we have to keep changing the pronunciations of places, but the influence of Qatar on the West, and a lot of money flowing to influence the West, and we're going to be talking to Jenna about that. Of course, she's host of Jenna Ellis in the Morning, that many of you already listen to, and host of the On Demand podcast, found at AFR.net. But that won't be till 10:30. And in the meantime, we have other news that Chris brings unto us.
Yes. Well, people continue to be very optimistic about this reported peace deal between Israel and Hamas, but others are still saying things like Hamas is a terrorist group. I don't believe anything they see or say, that kind of thing. Let's begin with the positive news here. For a change, oftentimes I bring in death, crime, and destruction. So I'm going to begin with the positive stuff, and I'm going to ask for Trey Yings talking about the various celebrations that are ongoing in Israel today. Clip one.
The mood is a mood of elation across Israel following this successful peace agreement that led to the release of 20 living hostages. Israeli people waited for more than 2 years, and they were promised back during the Biden administration that this war would come to an end, that negotiators would find a solution. And it just didn't happen. And it dragged on and on until President Trump sent his Middle East envoy, Steve Witkoff, and son-in-law Jared Kushner with a mission to get the deal across the finish line. And so there has been a mood of celebration. Last night, there was the end of the Jewish holiday of Sukkot with a holiday called Simchat Torah. And you could see in the streets of Tel Aviv, people were dancing. They were holding Torahs. And it was a mood that we'd not seen here since the October 7th massacre. And you do get this sense of relief among the Israeli people because they've been waiting for this moment. And so there are still difficult days ahead. You heard reminders from the families of the hostages who came out saying, don't give up yet. There are still 21 bodies being held by Hamas. But there's an understanding that the Middle East has entered into a new chapter. And despite the challenging days ahead and the challenges that will come with trying to implement phase two of this broader peace plan, there is hope in the Middle East for the first time in so long.
Well, Fred, we have been talking about this this week, and I think it is possible for us to separate and put into different boxes our feelings about what's happening in the Middle East. Some people are completely pessimistic about this peace plan ever coming to fruition or lasting long. Some people are guardedly optimistic, but good grief, I think we can all agree that the 20 being released is a absolute winner on the part of Donald Trump. I mean, this has been going on for 2 years. There have been other attempts to get some of these hostages released. Some have kind of been trickled out, but finally, as far as we know, all the living hostages are home with their families and friends. And as we said earlier in the week, that is a good thing, regardless of what else we think might be coming down the road.
Oh, absolutely. And if you've watched some of the reports coming out of Jerusalem and Tel Aviv over the last 48 hours or so, as these families are being reunited with those husbands, brothers, sons who have been held captive now for over 2 years. And to hear their cries of joy, you cannot help but celebrate with them. And we can only imagine what they have faced. And I think I related the other day watching one of these reunions, and it involved a mom whose son was seen digging his own grave
right
back there several months ago. Mm. The moment that she saw, after he was gone through a medical procedure to make sure everything's okay, when she embraced him, and I noticed like her eyes had deep rings underneath, like a woman that hasn't slept very well for 2 years, mm-hmm. Finally embracing him, and not even words.
Right.
Just noise coming, sounds coming from her heart and, you know, her soul, and being able to see her son again. He survived, and that's being repeated over and over again. Can you imagine now, as these hostages reunited with their families, they're going back to their homes that they haven't seen for a while. Some of these hostages, dads, who are able to embrace their kids for the first time in 2 years. So, of course, yes, we can celebrate all of this. And at the same time, we know the fabric of Hamas.
Right.
If anybody thinks that terrorism is done in the Middle East, think again. That is just not going to happen.
Well, they were executing people within Gaza,
yes,
that they thought, Hamas, I mean, the yes. Hamas thought had either cooperated with Israel,
yes,
or, if I'm not mistaken, correct me if I'm wrong, who were part of rival factions.
That's
who
correct.
Might want to politically be in charge of Gaza,
yeah,
in whatever step down the road in this peace plan they might be under. They were killing people in the street.
Yes, yes.
So there's no doubting the nature of what the world is dealing with in terms of Gaza and Hamas. Tony, just want to make mention of one thing. Comment if you'd like. What Fred is talking about and what I've been seeing over the last couple of days and reading, it struck me how national this sense of relief is. Mm. It's not just the people who have loved ones coming back, you know, their own personal tie to these hostages. There's a response on the part of the nation. And I think back about, you know, about 9/11, how our nation was touched and people responded. I find this interesting, and I don't want to make a big deal out of this, but people, groups, and nations feel things as a community, mm-hmm, a lot of times. And, I mean, they respond that way after Pearl Harbor. You and I were talking about, mm-hmm, Pearl Harbor earlier in the week. We were talking about some of these kinds of issues. People, 9/11, people responded. I forget what President Bush's approval rating soared into the 90s. Mm-hmm. Same thing with his father after the first Gulf War. People feel things corporately a lot of times. And I just found that interesting. I don't know if anybody else does. The fact that Fred was talking about how the whole nation has responded, even right, though they are not all connected to the individuals released.
Yeah, I think that's a normal human reaction to get some relief on getting some relief from such a just a dark time that they're still in, really. We are just, as humans, we are just not conditioned to experience those type of horrors and to live under those types of shadows for such prolonged periods of time. And I think,
yeah,
that's what the people in the nation of Israel have been doing. They've just, I mean, it's probably, it infiltrates their daily conversations, their daily news cycle, their daily thoughts about what happened on October 7th in 2023, and then, you know, what's going on in Gaza and, you know, working towards this deal. So I can't imagine just that sense of oppression. I was pretty young. The closest thing I would have to relate to would be 9/11.
Right.
But I was pretty young when that happened. So my understanding, I understood the gravity of it, but I was still a child in a lot of ways. So I just can't imagine living under that cloud of oppression. It was not God's design. And so anytime a people can get some relief, some light, some hope, it's going to lift their spirits. And I think that's what we're seeing nationally across Israel.
Yeah.
In terms of Hamas, you know, many people are saying, well, this is only phase one. There's phase two, three onward, so on. And all that is going to depend on Hamas, which is a terrorist group, giving up their arms, giving up territory that they're holding on to there in Gaza. President Trump says Hamas has no other choice but to disarm. Clip three.
We have told them we want to disarm, and they will disarm. And if they don't disarm, we will disarm them. And it'll happen quickly and perhaps violently. But they will disarm. And I spoke to Hamas, and I said, you're going to disarm, right? Yes, sir, we're going to disarm. That's what they told me. They will disarm or we will disarm them. Got it?
Well, he did not expand in terms of like who is they and we.
Well, he used the pronoun we.
Yeah.
So that tells me, I would love a follow-up question.
Right, yeah.
You said we, Mr. President. Does that mean American forces in Gaza?
Well, of course, now this has been kind of percolating over the last 24 hours or so. Whenever this was. Was this last night? This wasn't this morning.
It was last night because they aired the clip this morning on Fox and Friends.
Yeah. So this is, people are going to be thinking about this. Mm-hmm. Now, I think that President Trump does shoot from the hip. Okay. That's just his personality. Mm-hmm. He comes from a CEO background. You're the CEO of, you know, whatever, I don't know, Trump Enterprises or whatever. And you're used to people coming and say, hey, we get this problem. And you just make the decision. Mm-hmm. And you don't want to be questioned because you're the CEO. And so I think sometimes President Trump responds that way when someone says, well, what if Hamas doesn't? He's going to respond in that kind of mentality. No, they are going to disarm. So I don't know, Fred, Tony, I'm not sure what to make of that. He did say we. I don't know whether that means he is going to commit U.S. forces to help Israel in Gaza. Or he's talking in the kind of royal we of been in discussions with Benjamin Netanyahu, and we meaning the West, the pro, you know, freedom forces will get it done. I'm not sure. What do you guys think?
I think there's a great deal of celebration, and President Trump deserves a lot of credit for, as we've just been talking about, the release of these 20 hostages. But a lot of people are saying the hard part is yet to come.
Right.
And the hard part is, what do you do with Hamas terrorists who they're willing to die for their cause?
Right.
And so what happens to them? I mean, are they going to be identified and shipped somewhere? What country wants them? My feeling is that Hamas, just as you were alluding to, as of yesterday, was shooting people in the streets.
Yeah.
Of Gaza, that they declare the enemy. So I don't think an armed Hamas terrorist group is going away. Now, what does that mean politically? I don't think President Trump would have U.S. troops in Gaza, but I think they would give the strongest support possible to the IDF. Prime Minister Netanyahu has said, we'll take care of that ourselves.
Yeah.
He has said that. If the Hamas doesn't abide by this peace plan, which part two is for Hamas to disarm, we don't know what the time frame that President Trump and Netanyahu are giving Hamas, but that has to happen soon because there are 18 other parts to this peace plan.
Right.
And this is the next part.
Well, Tony, I not only don't want to see U.S. troops involved in Gaza, but I think it backfires if President Trump tries to send. You can't have U.S. troops in Gaza killing Arabs.
No.
Okay, because these other Muslim nations, these other Arab nations, I think there's an understanding that you attack Israel, you pay the pipe, you pay the price for that. That's got nothing to do with the United States going over there and killing Palestinians. And I think that if that's what President Trump has in mind, I think that backfires mm-hmm. and throws the entire Middle East into chaos.
Yeah, no, I agree. The most I think Trump should commit to is what we've been doing, which is military weapons, aid, assistance, as far as that goes, to directly help the IDF. Look, I don't like to call shots very often, but if I had to guess, I would say that part two of this peace plan, and in my opinion, Netanyahu and the IDF probably knows this is going to happen. Part two will likely start to disintegrate. I don't mean to be the pessimist here. And this will, the end result will be Israel having to go in and occupy Gaza just to clear out the remnants of Hamas. Because Trump has done everything he can do diplomatically and working out deals with some of these surrounding nations, isolating Hamas. I mean, they are living in a rubble pile with no discernible means of resupply and rearmament, and they're still refusing to concede. So to me, the end result of this is probably going to be some form of occupation, but that should be done by the IDF.
Right.
Well, U.S. should have no military presence.
And to your point, which I got to say, this is probably what's going to happen. To your point, though, Israel could say, listen, we had a peace plan in place.
Yeah.
We're trying to be reasonable here.
Yeah.
The rest of you, countries surrounding us, you see what we're up against here, and now we have no choice. But
Yeah.
One difficult thing may be for the U.S. and the world to identify who is a Hamas terrorist, and I say that based on an interview that Fred and I saw this morning on Fox and Friends. They brought on a video of a guy named Eli Sharabi. I hope I pronounced his name correctly, but Eli Sharabi talked about how a number of Hamas terrorists are actually working professionals from white-collar and blue-collar backgrounds. Mm-hmm. And clip six.
Our captors as well, some of them been teachers, some of them used to work in IT, some of them were electricians, some of them were doctors. And of course, you know, they are brainwashed with jihad, extreme, you know, jihad, that the worst they can be. We are not surprised about that at all.
The reason I wanted to play that is because if Gaza becomes a so-called Palestinian state, these people could theoretically just assimilate into that society under the career they had before they became a terrorist. And then they just reorganize, maybe under a different name, or they take up arms again.
Well, Fred, I was just going to say, I found this fascinating because I have a tendency, I'll speak for myself, I have a tendency to think of terrorists as being like werewolves.
Yeah.
Okay, they just turn into something monstrous. But this clip indicates these are just normal people who are in agreement with a horrifying ideology.
Yes. By the way, Eli Sharabi was held hostage for over 400 days. Mm-hmm. So he lived with these people.
Right.
So you're hearing testimony from a hostage and how he was treated by these people who are teachers, medical doctors. And that's why we wanted to play that clip, because a lot of people may have in their minds a terrorist is just a local thug who couldn't do anything else.
Right.
No, these are very intelligent people. Dear knows where they got their medical degree. They may have got a medical degree from the United States.
Yeah, they're not picking up delinquent youths off the street.
No.
Right? Recruiting them to their cause who have no other means of making a living. These are people who are intelligent.
Yes.
Educated.
Yes.
And Hamas is able to rope them into their cause.
Yeah, radicalize them if you want to call it that.
Right. Yeah. And to be trained killers.
Yeah.
And to see the Jews as subhuman.
Yes.
That's that we all know that's how you wind up
getting
people collectively to kill other human beings.
Yeah.
Is you prove to people or you convince people that the target are subhuman.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Americans did this to Indians. That's how you justify taking their lands.
Mm-hmm.
It just so people don't think I'm woke, the various Indian tribes did it to one another.
Right.
This tribe over here, they're subhuman. They're beneath us. We're going to get rid of them. This is human nature. Mm-hmm. But it is the logical steps that must be taken to overcome human hesitancy to take life.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Most of our listeners probably have never punched someone in the face really hard in a fight. Okay. We're not really built to enjoy that, let alone kill someone.
Yeah.
And let alone kill women and children.
Right.
In order to overcome that human hesitancy, you've got to convince people in their hearts and their minds that your targets are subhuman. And this is why I said on the show that I am, earlier in the week, I am thankful for these hostages being released. I am guardedly optimistic that they might have 4 or 5 years of peace. If they can get something, they can swing that deal. But ultimately, I'm pessimistic because the view I just expressed, that ideology mm-hmm. in Hamas, it's not just in Hamas. It's in whoever takes their place if Hamas goes away. It's in ISIS. It's in Hezbollah. It's in Iran.
That's right.
And you don't get rid of that with missiles.
No.
Or with weapons.
And these were people, you know, so devoted to the cause that when October 7th happened, everybody in Hamas, you had to know it's coming. I mean, the hammer's coming down
right.
like never before. But they're the
from
ones
Israel,
who jumped,
you mean?
By Israel, yes.
Yeah.
They're the ones who went into the tunnels with them. You know, it would be one thing if some of these people join with Hamas just to preserve their own families, you know, yeah. the guys in charge, you know, I support, you know, Hamas, what if death to Israel, blah, blah, blah. But then when the bombs start dropping, you know, you abandon it, you know, and you're out for your own survival. These people went into the tunnels with the hostages and were torturing them mm-hmm. and, you know, committing all sorts of atrocities against them. So, yeah, that is a mindset that, again, we talked about this earlier in the week. I don't think very few people in the West can even begin to understand.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, it's interesting. They don't value life.
No.
These Hamas terrorists don't even value the lives of their fellow Palestinians.
Right.
No.
Because Hamas at any point over the last 2 years could have put the white flag up.
Yes.
And it would have been over. It would have been over. But they were willing to see their own people, thousands of them, die rather than surrender.
They watched the entire city be made into a parking lot.
Yeah.
And never once.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
conceded.
And that's because the ideology that drives Hamas looks at their own people as valuable cannon fodder.
Yeah.
This is in the service of Allah
mm-hmm.
and jihad, and it doesn't matter if innocent Muslims die. It's in the service of a greater cause.
The rockets in the schools.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
That is part of what that ideology teaches,
mm-hmm.
is that you should be willing to die for the cause of jihad.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I've seen them, I've seen these people interviewed, maybe not here in the last 2 years, but previously, they're asked, what about is innocent people in Europe dying when a bomb goes off? And they say, there are no innocent infidels.
Yeah.
If you die because you refuse to submit to Allah, your death is justified. We'll be right back, folks. Hope you join us. Finally, some good news. Over 38,000 babies saved and more than 4,000 commitments to Christ through the ministry of Preborn this year alone. Here's Dan Steiner, president of Preborn.
But if we can get a mom into one of our clinics and show her her baby, and she has that close encounter of the best kind in her womb, she will choose life.
Preborn's networks of clinics provide hope, love, free ultrasounds, and the gospel in action across America. This is Ed Vitagliano. Will you join Preborn and AFR as we rescue 70,000 babies' lives this year? For $28, you can sponsor an ultrasound and help save a baby's life. To donate, dial #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250, baby, or donate securely at preborn.com/AFR. That's preborn.com/AFR.
This is Today's Issues. Email your comments to comments@AFR.net. Past broadcasts of Today's Issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at AFR.net. Now, back to more of Today's Issues.
And welcome back to Today's Issues. Ed Vitagliano sitting in for Tim Wildman this week, at least today and tomorrow. I think Tim will be back Friday for Trivia Friday. I'm joined in studio by Fred Jackson, Tony Vitagliano, and Chris Woodward. And now from a remote bunker in an undisclosed location, we want to welcome Jenna Ellis, host of Jenna Ellis in the Morning, heard weekdays at 7 a.m. Central Time on AFR, and host of the on-demand podcast that you can find at AFR.net. Jenna, good morning to you.
Good morning. And, you know, you'd think that I'm hunkered down with, like, Tucker Carlson and Mark Levin and all of them, but no, it's just Todd and Copper.
Todd and Copper, the dogs. Now, yes. When you mention their name, do their ears perk up? Or they?
They do, yes. But we actually went to the dog park for a little bit before this, so they are well-rested and just laying here at my feet in the bunker.
That's in the bunker. Well, that's why we raised our kids. When we didn't want them to, you know, act up, we just took them to the park and just ran them till they were exhausted. Yeah.
Exactly. I thought you were going to say you took Tony in a bunker.
No. Hey, listen, glad you could join us. And we wanted to talk to you. I don't know. We may toss an issue or two in addition to this. I don't know. Depends how quickly we move through it. But you had sent some articles to some of us in news. I met them over the weekend about Qatar and or Qatar. This is frustrating to me, is having two pronunciations for every place in the Middle East. First of all, how do you pronounce it?
I say Qatar, but Qatar. You know, I've heard it both ways. So.
Okay. All right, it used to be Qatar.
Tomato, when I was, tomato.
Yeah, tomato, tomato. We just got through before the break. I'm sure you were listening just with intensity to our conversation. No, you may just now be tuning in. We were talking about ideologies, especially with regards to Hamas. When we're dealing with the ideology of Islam, which is not just a religious worldview. It is a worldview that encompasses politics and whether people groups should be allowed to survive and all those kinds of things. It really is difficult to separate having, you know, trade relations with a country like Qatar or Saudi Arabia and separating that from the way they view the world. You believe that Qatar is actively working to undermine the West, even while we at times can get certain deals worked out with them. Why don't you kind of elaborate on that?
Yeah, and that's a great introduction because you're absolutely right that Islam is not just a religion, it's a belief system. And similarly, Christianity is not just a faith or religion, it is a belief system. It is a lens by which we view the world. And for Christians who say, well, you know, I want to just proclaim Jesus in my church, and he's in my heart, but then I can go out and think however I want on politics or not even engage in politics because it's dirty, it's whatever, then I would submit that if you are saying that, you don't really understand what Christianity actually is. And similarly, I think a lot of people in America don't actually understand what Islam is, that Islam is a whole belief system. It's not just a faith that they profess quietly. If you do not subscribe to the tenets of the Islamic faith, then you are by definition an infidel that deserves death. And this is why they commit jihad. And so this is where when they have Sharia law, this isn't just a a political belief. It is a whole system by which those who are Islamic countries, their law and politics reflect that worldview. And so why does this matter to us? Well, Qatar, which is an Islamic country, they fund Islamic networks and clerics that suppress Christianity and glorify extremism. They support that ideology, not the Christian faith. And while here in America, yes, we have the First Amendment. You are free to believe, to practice your faith. We have, obviously, Muslims in this country. That's okay. Our system, and I mean, as Christians, we would say, well, come into a saving knowledge of God, obviously. But in terms of what our state does, our state law and politics reflects a Christian biblical worldview. That's why we are a Christian nation. But Qatar has sought to undermine that. They fund media networks and movements that despise the very freedoms that they exploit. They are using our platforms to undermine our civilization, and they're doing it primarily in our universities. You wonder why the universities have gone so woke. It's because since 1981, Qatar has poured billions into American universities, not out of philanthropic causes, but specifically to buy the young minds of the West. This is a Maoist tradition that if you indoctrinate the young people, then you don't even have to wage war in a traditional sense. You will then occupy the territory because the young people's minds will have been captured. So I wrote a piece for Town Hall, and I'll just close with this. It's titled, How Qatar is Buying the Minds of the West. And that was last week in Town Hall, and you can go and read it there, How Qatar is Buying the Minds of the West.
Janet, Fred here. I agree with everything that you've said, which is puzzling to a lot of folks then as to why President Trump would trust them as part of this deal. And I mean, our Secretary of War, Pete Hegseth, within 24 hours of all of this earlier this week, opening a portion of our airbase, I believe in Idaho, to the Qataris to help them train on their F-15s. Why do you suppose he's willing to trust them?
Because he is the art of the deal, and he believes that negotiation ultimately prevails. I mean, even if you all heard him yesterday at the Medal of Freedom ceremony for Charlie Kirk, which of course then, you know, became a Trump rally, like everything does that Trump speaks at, he was talking about how, you know, we have worked with so many countries to foster peace, and he genuinely believes that you can negotiate with terrorists. I mean, that's really what it comes down to. And so he believes that as long as you negotiate, that these people actually want the same things that we do. And the problem with that, and what is ultimately going to undermine that position, and I think this is maybe his biggest blind spot in terms of, because he's an excellent negotiator, he's accomplished things that nobody thought possible, but to suggest that somehow these people want to approach the table because they care about their businesses, they care about financing, they care about families and, you know, the values that we do is just simply false. They care about pushing their ideology. They're actually better evangelists for their own cause than sometimes we are. So the whole Qatari executive order on safety and, you know, possibly sending our troops and boots on the ground is absolutely puzzling. And in my view, the base of MAGA has not raised their voices loud enough to question that and to push back on that, because it's absolutely mind-boggling why this country that enforces strict control at home but funds ideology that erodes family and faith here in America is being treated like an ally.
Hey, it's Chris here. Since the passing of Charlie Kirk, since the assassination of Charlie Kirk, a lot of young people have been inspired to get educated and to speak out on these and other issues. Taking that into account, what should we do to make sure these young people know as much as you do on this issue as they're in school or about to go to school?
Yeah, this is where I'm a huge advocate for homeschooling. And I know that that's not available necessarily as a choice to every family. I mean, it is legally, but in terms of just the practical means. But even if you can't homeschool, parents are still responsible for the discipleship of their children. And we see the studies that show that huge percentages of even children who are raised in a Christian home lose their faith when they go to college. And why is that? Because they're not prepared to confront the ideology that is present at so many universities across the country. And so what Charlie Kirk did was actually go to those universities and confront those ideologies head on and actually answer those questions. And I think we need to continue to take up that mantle and to prepare our children, like, and my parents did that with me. They discipled me and my brothers. They took that incredibly seriously. And they said, if there's one thing that our children have to understand and be proficient in before they graduate our household, it is in their faith and the Word of God. And that rock solid faith and understanding the scriptures and knowing and having a defense of my faith before I went to college, before I confronted ideologies outside of my parents' home, after I was an adult, that grounded me enough that I was not taken captive by those false ideologies. So I think it is incumbent upon parents before your kids are 18 and they leave your home. That is the number one calling. And if your kids are already older or, you know, they're already out of the home, these need to be the questions that we meet those questions with answers. And I mean, even tonight, I'm going to my church to be part with my pastor of the youth group at our church that's in high school. And we're having an open Q&A where they can ask any questions. And this is so great. You'll love this, Chris. I got a couple of the questions in advance that students had submitted. And some of these are just amazing because they're asking questions like, well, why does the Bible or why do you believe that swearing is actually a sin? You know, and you can tell by those questions what students are hearing and then what they're hearing from the world and that clash. And so I'm really excited to go do that at my church. Charlie did that at universities. And I think we need to have more adults who are proficient in the things of Christ to go and meet young people where they're at, take their questions, and have loving answers.
Jenna, last question. You mentioned earlier when you first came on that some of these radical Islamic ideologies are in the United States. You have imams who are preaching this kind of stuff. You have Qatar paying for college kids and people who interact with them to promote their ideology. What, I don't know how to exactly to phrase this, what can we legally do with a First Amendment that is being used and abused by people who are taking advantage of our freedoms in order to undermine the very document that grants those freedoms?
Well, the First Amendment doesn't give license to foreign funding to our universities. I mean, Congress can still legislate and cut off a lot of this foreign funding from Qatar and China, by the way.
Right.
And they should do that. But the problem with it is that the uniparty that's in D.C. is benefiting from all of this foreign money. And the same exact problem, and I was talking about it on air this morning on my show, that the problem is the exact same problem that we have with federalism, that the federal government is giving so much money to the state governments that now the state governments are beholden to the federal government, where our Constitution provides for federalism and it shouldn't be that way. But the states don't want to give up the money. Well, the federal government doesn't want to give up the foreign money. And so it's up to Congress to actually legislate and say, you know, you can come here and debate in the public square. Have more speech is good speech. We will show and prove the falsity and the depravity of your ideology. But and that's fine, you know, debate in the public square, but you can't give billions of dollars to these institutions to pay for that ideology for the purposes of indoctrination.
All right, so let me just ask I said one more question. Forgive me. I didn't intend to lie. Quick follow-up, okay?
I should be like Katie Porter, ending the interview now. I'm sorry. No follow-up.
Yeah.
Come on.
Get out of my shot.
Yeah.
All right. So how in the world is I understand what you're saying. Totally agree with it about Congress saying no to foreign money. How do we expect the fox that's guarding the hen house to put up a fence to keep the fox out?
Replace the fox. And that's what we have consistently and persistently tried to do with good policy that has to be supported by good people. And when you look at the people that are in office right now who call themselves conservatives and who maybe are a part of the Republican Party, but they're Republican in name only, right? And the Republican Party is the party that is supposed to be advancing conservatism. A lot of these people won't do it because they're just as bad as the Democrats on the other side. And so if we're actually serious about our people in office actually making headway on behalf of we the people and we're responsible for our government, we can't just sit on the sidelines, especially when it comes to primaries, because that's the best opportunity that we have to choose the best candidate. And we need to also have better candidates. And I know it's a huge thing to run for office, but we need to have better people. And for the people who can donate to these campaigns, a lot of times the only difference between having, you know, the rhino for 47 terms versus the new better, you know, pastor who's willing to run for office is funding.
Ed had his last question, Jenna.
I lied. Now Fred's going to lie.
Jenna, there's a story out there this morning. The headline is Trump administration revokes visas of six foreigners accused of mocking Charlie Kirk. So as a constitutional lawyer, you're certainly familiar with the First Amendment. The reason they're being told to leave the country, they were critical of Charlie Kirk. They voiced an opinion against Charlie Kirk. The administration is saying that's enough to revoke your visa. You're out of here. Does the First Amendment protect people who may be critical of a Charlie Kirk? And is it wise for the government to say you're out of here because you expressed an opinion that we don't agree with?
Well, my opinion on it is that the government should be able to revoke a visa for any reason at any time. I mean, this is the same way as having a guest in your home. If they say something you don't like, you can kick them out. And that's not, it's no different when it's the government just because we have a First Amendment that they're able, you know, to express opinions. The First Amendment and all of our laws and due process are supposed to primarily protect citizens. And so there is a different view of people who are here visiting. Now, the State Department did not say exactly what type of visa, and so whether or not there can or will be legal challenges to that, you know, will depend. But in terms of the propriety of this, I mean, if you have someone who's coming into our country as a visitor, and then they express and applaud a violent act, absolutely, they should be out of our country. There in no sane country should we say, well, you know, we're all for freedom of speech, so it's fine as long as, you know, that you glorify violence, as long as, you know, you are obeying the laws, because glorifying violence leads to the very ideologies that permeated the young 22-year-old who pulled the trigger anyway. So I'm all for deportation of these people.
Okay.
Well said, and I will tell you, you changed my mind on this issue. I had concerns about it, but I like your analogy of being a guest. That is different than kicking a family member out for saying the wrong thing. Well done. That's why we have bright people on the show.
I rest my case.
Yes.
And let this be a lesson, Ed, for Thanksgiving.
Yes.
If someone comes to your house and said, you know, you can say, hey, you're a guest. I might deport you.
You've given half the country the right to go, you know what, Aunt, whatever, I don't like you.
Well,
get out.
And now the revelation is growing up, I could have said a lot more than I did because I was a family member, not a guest. So
there you go.
I was viewed with rights I didn't even know I had.
That's right. You should have
consulted a lawyer.
That's true. Oh man, yeah, that's a good way to end this segment. Is young people, if you don't like what your parents are doing, consult a lawyer. All right, hey Jenna, wonderful having you on. We do appreciate your many great insights and your take on these kind of things and the legal perspective, as well as the Christian perspective you bring to the issues we discuss with you. Anything you want to say about upcoming shows or podcasts that you want to maybe tease for listeners?
Well, obviously, everyone should be listening already to the morning show. We break down a lot of the headlines. And tomorrow, I know that there is a A couple of Supreme Court issues going on, including the redistricting case that was heard this morning, and then also the kind of, in my opinion, the wrongful denial of Alex Jones' appeal. So we're going to break that all down tomorrow morning along with some other things. So definitely don't miss that.
All right. Thank you, Jenna.
Thanks, guys.
Okay.
That was Jenna Ellis, host of Jenna Ellis in the Morning, heard weekdays at 7 a.m. Central Time on American Family Radio, and host of the on-demand podcast that you can find at AFR.net. You can find other podcasts there at AFR.net. If you look at the top, there are some drop-down menus you can click on. There is one that says podcast, and you click on that, all the podcasts that are available for you to stream or download and listen to later, you could do that right there at AFR.net. All right, Chris.
Yes.
What else you got?
There was a Medal of Freedom ceremony yesterday at the White House in which President Donald Trump awarded Charlie Kirk the Medal of Freedom. His wife or widow, Erica Kirk, accepted that medal. One of the people that was watching this, like a lot of us, is a young lady named Isabel Brown. Isabel used to work at TPUSA prior to becoming her own podcaster. And she was on Fox today talking about the Medal of Freedom and the fact that she said Charlie deserved it. And then she went on to speak against the stereotypes of people that are Gen Z. Now, Gen Z, for those not aware, are people that were born in the late 1990s up until around 2012. And there are some stereotypes out there that Gen Zers are lazy, they're uninformed, they don't care about their country. Isabel says that's not true, and we've witnessed that since the assassination of Charlie Kirk. Here's more of what she had to say, clip 12.
You know, Gen Z gets a bad reputation for whatever reason. We're often called too young to know what we're talking about, that we're too leftist and woke and bought into all of the lies of the world. I don't see it that way, and I know Charlie didn't as well. Generation Z has an incredible weight on our shoulders, really to save Western civilization from the lies and the upside down woke leftism that we grew up in and we've been living through. Young people today are kind of universally wise beyond our years because we've had to, but we all got a really strong wake up call this last month to understand that life is incredibly short. We are not afforded the luxury of 100 plus years to accomplish everything we know we can and to run the race that God has set before us. We may only get 31 years. So to know that tomorrow we can take the opportunity to wake up and live every day like it's our last, to tell the truth, even if our lives depend on it, and to try to make this world a little bit more like the next one, that is truly the greatest commission we each could receive. And I hope and pray that we continue to pick up that microphone in Charlie's honor in whatever sphere of influence we have.
Now, I can relate to what she's saying about how people are saying Gen Zers are uninformed, they don't care, these kinds of things, because society said the same thing about millennials when we were the young Americans that were new
way
to the scene
in the
workforce.
Way to make this about yourself, Chris.
Yes. So I
classic,
you know,
millennial thing to do.
Yeah, that's right. We went from the look at me generation to the me generation to the look at me, and now we're on the look at my selfies. But anyway, she makes great points here, and that's just something you don't hear enough about with young people.
What was her name again?
Isabel Brown.
Okay. Fred, that was great.
Is she a Gen Zer?
Yes. Yes.
And that's age bracket what?
Late 1990s to around 2012.
Wow. I'm very impressed.
Yeah.
So age-wise, that's like 27 and under?
Yes.
Kind of 27? Mm-hmm. Okay.
The new generation, but I have two kids. One of them is a Gen Z. The other is Generation Alpha. Why they're called that, I'm not sure.
Well, they're going all the way back to the beginning of the alphabet.
Yeah. We went from Gen Z or Gen X to Millennials.
No, it was Gen Y.
Yeah.
The forgotten generation.
And now we're starting over.
I'm going to make a little chart for myself so I can keep up with this.
And I'll do that.
Adjust it every year. So that was... Well said.
Very impressed with that young lady. Mm-hmm. And I think we have to be careful about stereotyping age brackets.
Right.
Because quite often, the people that make the news are the radicals.
Yeah.
From those various groups. But I thank the Lord. I mean, Charlie Kirk's group, Turning Point, demonstrates there are some wonderful kids coming up. It's encouraging.
And we have some here.
Yes.
At AFA and AFR.
Absolutely. So it's very encouraging to hear that. And we ought to be careful about stereotyping groups of people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right. And instead encourage people within those groups, hey, listen, what you're doing is really good. How can I help you?
Yeah.
You know, Fox did an interview with a young lady this morning who's 18. She already owns two pizza restaurants.
I like her already.
What an entrepreneurial spirit. So it's a lesson about not boxing people. All right.
Yeah.
This may be a millennial, but I'm not like that one over there.
Right.
All right. So don't treat me like the negative images that were often given of various groups. I was so impressed with that young lady. That's why I asked about her age.
Yeah. And she went to college in Colorado, which is Colorado, of course, is where Jenna is from. So something's in the water there in Colorado, perhaps.
Well, and Tony, this is this is what conservatives say about like black people. We don't want to judge people by the color of their skin.
Right.
Okay. And that's why we are opposed to woke ideology, because you're assuming that all white people are alike or all black people are alike. Or all Hispanic people are alike, and we don't like it when the DEI folks do it. We shouldn't fall into that trap as well with young people.
Yeah, I am encouraged by a lot of what I'm seeing coming out of Gen Z. I mean, they're growing up in such an age of confusion and radical ideologies. It's good to see young people navigating through that to find the truth, expressing and standing up boldly for it.
Yeah. And you know, maybe they've been told to you're not allowed to say X, Y, and Z for so long that now maybe they're saying, you know what, I'm saying it.
Yeah.
And so good on them. Very impressive. Thanks for sharing that with us, Chris. All right, Chris, you're done.
Yes.
Steve Paisley Jordahl will be in after the break. But that means we do have to take a five-minute break for news. And when we return, more of today's issues, you're listening to the American Family Radio Network.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.